Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Hi, thanks for joining today's webinar, Resilience. It's not about bouncing back. What you can do now to build resilience in the midst of disruption. Today, you're going to learn the three characteristics of resilient leaders and organizations, strategies you can use right now to increase your personal resilience or that of your team, and a framework you can use as a checklist to ensure that you're building all of the components of resilience. Our next host is the founder of LeaderShift Insights. She works with leadership teams facing disruption who want to increase the organization's capacity to adapt so they can emerge stronger and more effective faster. She's known for facilitating high-stakes meetings with challenging stakeholders, creating team alignment, and unraveling tough issues that hinder business results. Her book, Resilience, It's Not About Bouncing Back, became an international bestseller in 2 weeks last summer. Please welcome Jennifer Eggers.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Eggers with LeaderShift Insights, and what you see on the screen is the formal piece of what they always put up on paper in terms of why I'm here, but I wanted to tell you a little bit more about who I am and why I really am here to talk to you about the topic of resilience. So 15 years ago, I was a nationally ranked top 50 competitive water skier. I moved around a lot for work, so I was actually a state champion in three states. And I was burning the candle at both ends, really running hard with executive level roles at Bank of America and later at as head of executive development at AutoZone, until my first car accident knocked me out of competition and brought me to a complete standstill. So just when I was ready to make a comeback about a year later, I was hit by an 18-wheeler on the interstate. And you'd have thought that that would have ended my skiing career, but I continued to try to rehab again, still while working. And on my first day back on the water a year later, I collapsed and had to be lifted back into the boat, diagnosed with a rare blood disorder, and learning that I would never ski again at the time was the final straw. So in spite of continuous waves of traumatic events and debilitating disruption, I kept going. And I left my corporate role and I launched LeaderShift Insights just as we headed into the recession in 2008. So it was shortly after that that I asked myself the question, other than being just really hard-headed and refusing to give up, what had I done that could be replicated to get through it all and not only survive, but actually emerge stronger and more effective than I was before? So I researched everything I could get my hands on that was written about resilience. There wasn't much. I was hell-bent on figuring it out, first, to figure out if others could learn something from it, and second, whatever it was, if that could be used to build more resilient organizations. And that was a passion that really stemmed from a desire to improve life in corporate America. So I will tell you I'm a resilience expert because I've lived it, personally and at work. My team and I created the only proven resilience framework that can be used to build both individual and organizational resilience. So through collaboration with the Adaptive Leadership Network at Harvard's Kennedy School, our own research and work with hundreds of clients, we have validated the framework and applied it to the difficult work of helping leaders create more resilient and courageous organizations. And I want to share that with you today. In times like this, knowing that your organization can and will come out on the other side of disruption is stronger than you went in is critical. It puts leaders back in control and it reduces stress. Resilience is not the bouncing back in the aftermath, but rather the power to be energized and elevated by disruption. There are some very specific things that I learned in building resilience that can be leveraged both by individuals and organizations. So as we prepare to emerge from the COVID crisis, organizations are in desperate need to accelerate recovery. And I would submit that resilience is still the most important skill for leaders today, and very few are talking about it, although perhaps more today than a couple weeks ago. But I'm here to share with you how you too can not only rebound from setbacks, but emerge stronger and more effective from disruption, including this one, as an individual and an organization. I've worked with corporate leadership teams in over half the 50 states and 11 countries over the last over 25 years. I've seen a lot of disruption and a lot of different approaches to managing it. There are a few things that will guarantee your ability to emerge energized and elevated by the kind of disruption we see today. And so this is what I do for companies, and it starts one leader at a time. So the biggest challenge with disruption, really any disruption, is that your response to it pushes you beyond your current capacity, whether you're an individual facing it or an organization. But if you can learn to leverage disruption, there are some really cool things that you can do. And the first of those is the ability to do more with what you already have. And I mean seriously, like 40% more. So this year I led a few sessions for a leadership team of a company that was in high growth mode. They did this so well that the CEO came to me 3 months later and asked if we could change the plan. I got a little nervous, but it turns out they did a $1 billion deal a year early and accelerated their strategy by 2 years in 3 months. Doing more with what you already have is a huge impact of becoming resilient. The second is it allows you to come back stronger and more effective. That company I just mentioned, they have a lot more confidence today. They're almost daring disruption to hit them at this point. I would just ask you to think about how you feel about disruption and how your team feels about it. And again, this ability to come back stronger and more effective is a direct byproduct of spending some time building resilience. The next one is about making progress on complex challenges. This one's a little tougher, but have you struggled with challenges that cross organizational boundaries? At a major airline a couple weeks ago, a leader told me that her team is closer and more aligned now than they ever have been before. So this particular crisis really forced them to focus only on what matters. Another CEO confessed to telling me that he thought his team could never work from home because they just wouldn't be productive. Well, you know how that turned out. The fourth one is really about staying alive. And if you can leverage disruption, we can keep people from burning out and instead keep the focus on what you're trying to do. And that works for you individually as well. These are the kinds of things that organizations can accomplish when their leaders work on building resilience. But usually when we see people are not resilient, we see a feeling of being overwhelmed. We see change fatigue. We see people disengaged. We see an increase in internal competition and hidden agendas. And then there's this sort of, see if this resonates, this feeling that something big is coming, or maybe now it's something else big is coming, and we don't really know what to do about it. Have you ever felt that way? When we do studies with organizations and they do surveys, what we find is that less than half of employees say they have a clear picture of where they're going and how to get there. And that doesn't get better when you're isolated or working remotely. This is a very expensive challenge for organizations. If we think about the cost to hire a leader, you know, the cost of recruiting and hiring is estimated at 30% of salary plus the time lost when they're not there. The research shows that lost revenue and opportunity when a leader is absent is often 2 to 3 times their annual salary. We take a huge hit to morale when someone leaves, if they're burned out or they're confused or they don't feel aligned to the strategy and they leave. We take a huge hit from morale when we don't fill from within. There's a cost to burnout and change fatigue when people are stressed, and a cost of failed initiatives. There's the old statistic that 70% of projects fail to realize the changes that they are seeking to do. But what's the cost of that? What happens if the projects you're working on don't succeed? Before we go there, I want to share a story with you so you can understand what it looks like when disruption hits a resilient organization. There was this auto parts company that I worked for. The scene opens with one of their teams not delivering. One year, the guy in charge of opening 333 new stores only was able to open 250. Now, that's just not this guy being slow. That's a a function of not finding the right real estate and not finding property where they thought they were going to get the return on the investment that they needed. There's a lot of things that go into this. But for those of you that know retail, you know that shiny new stores create a surge in revenue. And around about July, it was evident that they weren't going to see the surge that they promised to Wall Street. So let's break that down. The problem is they're not going to meet revenue targets. And the outcome required was to increase revenue. So here's how it played out. And you can just imagine the scene at the executive meeting when this guy had to come in and share this news with the group. Well, it didn't go exactly the way you might think, because this team didn't even need a meeting. As soon as the news broke, the head of sales jumped in and created contests so his team could cover part of the gap. The head of supply chain found some savings and got high margin products to the stores faster. Merchandising tightened up a few contracts with vendors. Even the CHRO jumped in. He figured out how to attract some more qualified store associates and run some training programs early to get them ramped up faster. There were already financial metrics in place that ensured every single associate from the front line to the CEO was incentivized on the same metrics. Every single person on this team knew their place and they were empowered to act. They didn't need a meeting. They were prepared for the disruption ahead of time. And because of that, there was no internal competition and there was only one agenda. I don't recall even having much burnout. And most of those people, this was a while ago, most of those people are still there. They didn't quit. They didn't leave. They didn't get frustrated. They're still with that organization. This place doesn't have to spend a whole lot on recruiting. Bonus paid out that year at over 100% of target to every single employee. Talk about energizing in the face of disruption. That's what resilience can do for your company. Imagine what it can do for you. But I want to share, it's hard to talk about resilience without really defining what it is and what the characteristics of it are. So how do you know when you're being resilient, either individually or as an organization? So there are three characteristics, and these are from Harvard. They're from a woman by the name of Diane Kotu, who's an editor at Harvard Business Review. And this was some of the original resilience research that I found. It was actually one of only five articles that had been written at the time, but it rings true incredibly today. The first is the capacity to adapt and face down reality. It's a staunch acceptance of reality. And it is generally, there's this common belief that resilience comes from optimism. Well, that's really only true where optimism doesn't distort your sense of reality. So this notion of just being happy and having rose-colored glasses really doesn't help our ability to be resilient. In fact, it can really hurt our ability to be resilient. Resilient people and resilient organizations have a very sober and down-to-earth view of the kind of reality that really matters for their survival. So it's not that optimism doesn't have a place, but by itself, it's not enough. So when we think about really facing reality and this firm grasp on reality, it is grueling work. So staring down reality and really coming to grips with it is what prepares us to be able to get through and endure hardships and disruption. So as we do this, we train ourselves for sort of how to survive in this kind of situation. So the first is a firm grasp on reality. The second, and I think this is coming to life particularly today, is the ability to find meaning in a situation. So the idea here is that meaning can also be sort of linked to accountability. When people are in this sort of victim mentality, it's really hard to accept reality, and so it's hard to find meaning in an event that is hurtful and disruptive. So the idea is closely linked to the idea of making meaning in bad times, right? Disruption isn't always bad. Sometimes it's good. But the idea is that we're able to separate ourselves from survival and coping and actually really think about what we're learning and what this event is teaching us. So some companies use after-action reviews when they do projects. The military is great at this. But those after-action reviews are one thing that helps us find meaning in a situation. With COVID and some of the crisis we're dealing with today, it might even have to do with figuring out what are the things that worked and what are the things that we had to shift that we were able to sort of make work during this time. The third characteristic of resilient people and organizations is the ability to improvise. And so this one really requires sort of in the moment decisions, making use of available resources, and figuring out how to solve problems in a way that we might not have before. Maybe we're being a little bit scrappy and using available tools and just kind of using what we've got. If we think about, you know, people on Zoom in their kitchens and their bunny slippers and their refrigerator in the background, who cares? The focus isn't on your background. The focus is on the fact that we're having some great interaction and we're able to still communicate and have good dialogue. So this notion of the ability to improvise and figure out how to get things done, even when things around us are hard, is really a critical, the third critical way to tell whether you're being resilient. So the really neat thing for me when I did this research or when I learned about this research was that this applies to individuals as well as organizations. So my thinking was, if it applied to both, then we ought to be able to learn how to build resilience for both individuals and organizations the same exact way. And that's what we wanted to take this research a step further, and that's what our Leadership Resilient Framework does, is provides a framework and a checklist for you to build resilience individually or for your team or your organization exactly the same way. And often it's most effective to really think about it yourself and internalize it for yourself first and then the organization. So that's the way we do our workshops. It's all about individual, and then we bring in the organization and build the exact same framework for the company. And you can do exactly that for your team. So before we talk more about how we do this, I want to say that before we get to the framework, there is something that if you want to build resilient organizations and resilient teams, there's something really critical that we need first, and that is alignment. So if we think back to changes and things that you've seen implemented, I would ask first, how many of you have lost time trying to get buy-in for something, right? I hate that phrase, and I'm sure others do too. Alignment is different than buy-in. Right? We create alignment. We don't get alignment. If you're trying to get someone to buy in or buy something, you're not creating alignment. Companies do this all the time when they hire consulting firms to build a solution, and then they have to go get buy-in, right? It never works. So here's an example. We worked with a large retail company not long ago, and they had two organizations that were merging, and the two leaders did not get along at all. So we were told, before we even came in, we were told these two would probably refuse to show up. Well, it's really hard to facilitate an alignment session without the leaders in the organization. So we did a fair amount of work ahead of time to try to mitigate that risk. But these two weren't buying in at any price. So what was fascinating is that we did actually get them to show up for the meeting. And after they sat with us for 2 days, what was really, really cool is that at the end, by the end of the alignment session, the president of the company walked in, and the two leaders that didn't get along were actually at the front of the room. They each had a marker. They were at the flip chart, and they were working together to build the new organization. And that's what I mean by alignment. Alignment is when people so completely understand where the organization needs to go and what they need to do, that they're going to do the right thing, even when the leader's not there. So think for a second, if this is your team, if this is the team that you serve on, this is when that team is so aligned that there's no internal competition, there's no debate about priorities, those priorities are clear, and there's a lot less drama, competition, and distraction. it's a sense that we're in it together. If you've read Simon Sinek's Start With Why or Find Your Why, when people are really aligned, they're crystal clear on the why and the what. So they may not agree, but they understand where the team is going, the role they play in getting it there, and why it's important. So these are things as a leader that we really need to think about. Where is our team? Are they aligned? And how can we get them aligned? And it's really not as hard as you might think. It's probably another workshop, but it's really not as hard as you might think. But there are a few tests for alignment that you can use. So the first is, if there's internal competition, there's not alignment. The second one would be to ask folks to explain their version of where the team is going in their own words. I don't really care so much about repeating and reciting, you know, a semantically perfect mission or vision. What I do care about is that people are on the same page and they're saying basically the same thing about where the organization or the team is going. So if your people can do that, they're probably aligned. The last test we call the Snickers test. This is my favorite because we hand out Snickers bars when we do it. But if we look at the stated mission, the vision, the values, like all of those corporate sort of artifacts that hang on the wall in a conference room, if we look at those, we spread them all out on the table and we'll say, what of all these things makes you snicker? Because you know that we say this, but it's really not how we act. Those are the areas to sort out where you're not aligned. And that can be a pretty effective test too. This picture that you see is a rendering of an aligned team that we worked with. We did not prompt them to pose. No one said, hey, let's, you know, put up our hands and show a five. But they had just gone through a two-day session where they decided around a $500 million revenue goal. And they all got together and they wanted to have this picture taken at the end. And I thought it was so cool because they had never really, this was actually their, believe it or not, their first staff meeting in several years. Unreal to me. But anyway, they got together and they did this and they all really got aligned. And so I love showing this picture because I think this team articulates really that sort of alignment that's really in your heart, not so much in your head. And so that's what we think of when we think about aligned teams. So when we try to build a resilience framework, you can do it personally without alignment, unless you want to get aligned with yourself. But when we start to think about it as a resilience framework for an organization, we really need to create that alignment around what it is. All right, two ways to build resilience. So you either go through a bunch of muck, right, and it makes you stronger, not a guarantee though, or you prepare ahead of time to make sure that you're ready when disruption hits. So I want to sort out these two ways because the interesting thing is a lot of people seem to think that resilience can't be taught or that people are more resilient when they go through a bunch of bad stuff. And that's sort of true, but here's the catch for me. I don't agree with that because just because you've been through a bunch of muck doesn't mean you're going to be stronger. And I bet every one of us could think of somebody who's gone through some really tough times and never came out. And in the same, you know, second part of that thought is I bet you can think of somebody that went through some worse times and came out really, really strong. So the idea is that those people or those organizations are doing something different. So that's what we want to teach and that's what we can replicate. The second way to build resilience, you know, this notion of doing something ahead of time is about preparation. So preparation fills the tank of energy. So let's just imagine you have this energy reserve tank that you can tap into when you need to. So preparation fills that tank. So the reserve is there when you need it, because chances are when you need resilience, you're going to need to give that extra effort. It's going to be when you're tired. It's going to be when disruption has hit and all your, you know, all your normal energy is gone. So you're going to need that extra boost. So, and the reason for this is that disruption has an energy to it. It evokes fear in some people. Sometimes there's always, you can always say disruption is sometimes good. And many times it is. And some people are really optimistic. But whether it's good or bad, in many people, disruption evokes fear, panic, scarcity, or excitement. Regardless, it's triggering. And it can be infectious. It's the same in your organization that it is in your life, just different ones, different disruptions. But here's the catch for those that want to push back and say, you know, disruption can be great and I get excited about it. I get it. But excitement is still an emotion. And here's the thing, your body does not differentiate positive stress from negative stress. They take the exact same physical toll on your body. So it's crucial, no matter how you think of disruption or how much you look forward to it or don't, it's crucial to have a framework in place, either your own or within your company, so that when the shock hits, you're already resilient or your team is already resilient. People know what to do. They do the auto parts company thing, right? And they spring into action. So that initial jolt of panic or fear or excitement becomes a catalyst to action. People on your team become energized by the possibilities unfolding instead of being exhausted or paranoid or jumping ship. You see, it's difficult to stand up when you don't know what you're standing on. And a lot of building resilience for either you or your team is figuring out what that foundation is. The problem is that we're asking people to go through challenges that require sacrifices or cause stress. And their ability to do that stems directly from who they are as people and how they view situations, or the filters they use to view situations with. We go into a lot of detail on this framework in the book, which I'll share with you at the end, Resilience, It's Not About Bouncing Back, or in our two-day workshop. But for now, I want you to think about this as a checklist for your team. And there's probably several hours of content for each of the things in this framework. But I'm going to give you an overview, and so you can at least use it as a diagnostic to say, here's where maybe we are resilient, here's where we have some work. So resilience is a function of your mindset and the choices that you make. Your mindset is made up of your attitude and your authenticity. And your choices stem from your purpose and how you define success. Underlying both of those things, the bedrock, are your core beliefs. Again, this applies to you as an individual and applies to your team and your company as well. Each of these things are areas to focus on. Like I said, the book goes deeper into each area, but in short, you can look at each of these and really assess where people are or where your team is. So your mindset, the question to ask is, do we have the right mindset for whatever we're up against? So mindset is about your attitude and your authenticity. So do we have the right attitude? Some might say, is your head screwed on straight? Right? But are you really looking at the disruption with the right attitude? Are you defeated by it, or is it sparking you into action? Authenticity is about the choices that we make and is how we're being and what we're projecting to the rest of the world or the rest of the organization, is that in alignment with who we really are? And the only way you're going to know that is to really have those conversations and think about it very intentionally. And those are very personal. They tend to be very deep conversations, but they're the conversations we need to have to do this difficult work. The choices that we make, the question that you would ask, you know, to take inventory on that one is, are we clear on how choices are getting made? So your definition of success, and that could be for your company, that could be your mission or your vision or your team's charter or your project charter, but your definition of success is really all about what does it look like when we're successful? Individually, I would ask, who am I being when I'm successful? And your purpose is not, I don't look at this so much as your amorphous purpose in life, but it's really about what is your purpose in a particular situation, what is the desired outcome? What's your purpose for being there? So, consummate great example is, you know, new boss takes over a team and, you know, someone keeps coming in late. So boss has to have some kind of conversation with said individual, right? So particularly if you're a new leader, you've probably experienced this one. But how does that conversation change based on what your purpose is? So if your purpose is to set an example, come down hard, and really make an example out of that individual, you're going to have a very, very different conversation than if your purpose is to show that team that the boss is collaborative and the boss will work with you. Those conversations are going to look very, very different. And that's why it's so important to have that purpose before we walk into those difficult situations. The thing is, and your core beliefs, I forgot that one. So your core beliefs, that question is, are we aligned around them or do we know what they are? So are we aligned and do we know what they are? If you're looking at this to build individual resilience, it really is, what do you believe about life and where the flowers grow and, you know, who made the universe and where you go after life is over? Whatever that is for you, some call it faith. But knowing your core beliefs, and we don't espouse any particular set, but knowing what's true for you is probably the single most important piece of building resilience. So if those are things you have questions about, that is initial work that you need to do personally. And as a team, that's the work that you do to figure out, why does the team exist? What are we here to accomplish? What do we know to be true about how we relate to the organization and it relates to us. The thing is, when we talk about this first individually in a workshop, when people come face to face with themselves, breakthroughs are incredibly powerful. So we had, and I'll just give you a few examples. We had a very burly DC manager, distribution center manager. He was known as a bit of a bully. And he, you know, he really went through and did the hard work of holding up that mirror and looking at himself in the framework. And when we finished the workshop, I asked everybody to kind of go around and just share a little bit about what they learned. And as he stood up with a tear streaming down one side of his face, he said, and I'll never forget this. This happened probably 20 years ago and I'll never forget it. He said, I've been riding a high horse and that horse's name is judgment. It's time to come down. We had the CEO of a merger of 7 companies. He sent 12 leaders to build a corporate resilience framework. So they worked on it individually, and then they built a framework for the company. And 2 months later, I called and I said, hey, you know, what's changed? Of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, boy, I hope something has for all the work that they did and the breakthroughs we saw. And he paused and he said, you know, Jennifer, the entire company is more courageous because 12 people went through that program and did that work. And one of those participants said, hey, I'm not cut out for this, and stepped out of a leadership role. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that either. It's really about knowing our purpose and knowing what we're there to do. So in summary, few things that we learned today that I wanted to point out. In summary, we've got the resilience framework, which you could certainly use as a checklist to see where your team is, and there's certainly a deeper dive for that in the book. And we've got the characteristics of resilient people and organizations. Those are a firm grasp on reality, the ability to find meaning in a situation, and an uncanny ability to improvise. Here's the good news. Everybody wants this recipe, but you know, I don't actually have it. But here's the good news. I thought this would show some good news. Every day, something shifts in the market. So a new technology, a new upstart company, some way you've always done something becomes obsolete. Now we got Amazon, Uber, Airbnb, or something like COVID happens. Disruption is inevitable. So either you're caught in it now or it's coming. And you have a choice. You can let it be something to rail against and resist, or you can harness its power to evolve and become even more resilient, to serve your customers more deeply and create more fulfillment for yourself and everyone you work with. Becoming a resilient company is about creating alignment and increasing the level of resilience of every individual within it. If you're a leader, that's something you can start doing personally. But I'll tell you what, it has nothing to do with bouncing back, because there is no back to bounce to. Life is about moving forward. And by the time we think about building resilience after something happens, by the time the environment moves forward, there's no back. So alignment is about making sure that everyone on the team is working together and supporting one another towards a shared goal and has the resilience to be energized and elevated by rapid disruptive change. Everybody deserves to be valued and energized and feel fulfilled when things, especially when things are happening that require them to step up and give their all in a stressful situation. That's what resilience is all about. In closing, I'll share that if you want more information, this is a great resource to go to. If you'd like to create more resilience on your team and drive better results in the face of rapid disruptive change, the book Resilience, It's Not About Bouncing Back contains a lot more detail than we can go into in a short webinar. And so my name and my email, my contact information, our website, and the link to get the book, which is also available on Amazon. But I think if you get it from our website, I'm pretty sure we have a discount on the website. It's a little bit cheaper than Amazon. So I wanted to make sure we had that link. It's www.leadershiftinsights.com/resilience-book. So you can go there and get a little bit of a discount. So thank you so much for your time. And good luck in building resilience.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, LEADX.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?